Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and today we have a very special guest who's phoning in from Carlton. Where are you? You're in France right now?
I'm in a train station in Valence right now.
So Carlton McCoy runs the beverage program over at the Little Nell in Aspen, Colorado, Master Sommelier, and now calling in from France. It's actually two out of our last three shows have been call-ins. We had Shelley Lindgren calling in from from Italy, and now I get to talk to you in France. Welcome.
Oh, wow.
Welcome to In the Drink. It's very exciting to have you here.
Thank you, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's pretty exciting. The last thing I thought I'd be doing at a train station right now, but...
So I definitely want to ask you about your experience with your high school and with the CCAP program. Tell us about what that was like and how that kind of set you up for a career in the food industry.
Well, I was very fortunate to find CCAP. The high school that I went to was to be very honest, a very dangerous place to be. And it's not a common place for masters and lays or anyone prominent in our industry to sort of be sourced from. I found CCAP when I was in high school as sort of a more focused culinary arts program while you're in high school, which is really nice. And as you went through the program, you sort of progressed and trained more in classic French cuisine. And at the end, in your senior year, you would compete in these culinary competitions. So after training and practicing these recipes, I actually won the finals for the CCAP competition in Washington, D.C., and got a full ride to the CIA, which for all of us who've gone to the CIA, I realize how expensive that is. Again, I was really, really fortunate. Definitely provided me with an opportunity I otherwise wouldn't have had, and definitely sort of, you know, put me on the right track to be successful in the industry.
Pretty amazing. What were these culinary competitions like? Was it like Top Chef in the Quickfire Challenge in school?
You know, the funny thing is, like, you know, I look at it now, and, you know, now I'm almost 30 years old, I look back and go, well, I can do that. It's like, well, for a 17-year-old, it's really difficult food to do. They give you a couple classic recipes that you have to execute. And they're judged by local, you know, Washington or New York chefs, by professional chefs, as to the quality, which is pretty exciting. So, I remember the first course was classic poached chicken breast with a fine herb sauce and turned vegetables. If you know, there's a lot of line cooks who can't properly poach chicken breast to the point where it's still moist and succulent and has some life to it. And also, I mean, who knows how to turn vegetables anymore, eh? So I'll be honest with you, if you're looking for people who turn vegetables, you're probably looking to a CCAP class, and you'll probably find the only people who know how to turn vegetables anymore. And the dessert was classic crepes with pastry cream and classic chocolate sauce. Again, with, these days, if you watch enough Food Network, you can sort of figure a lot of that out, but for a 17-year-old kid 10 years ago, it was really, really difficult.
Okay, so you are at the Little Nell up in Aspen at something like 8,000 feet above sea level. Super high altitude. Is tasting wine at that altitude more challenging, or is it kind of like when you have Kenyan runners who are like running in the hills and then they come down to sea level and their lungs are expanded?
People ask me, I'll be honest, I think the largest contributing factor is just a level of calm, I think, blind tasting wine, if you're nervous, your senses are numb. So I think you go into the mountains, things are calm, it's quiet, you're a little more focused. So people tend to do a lot better at elevation. In general, your biggest issue is probably going to be, just how dry it is. So it's really funny. You go around to the Massachusetts Lake Exam and everyone's, you know, spraying, like you need nasal sprays and things like that. Just overthinking things is pretty funny to watch, but there's not much of a difference, to be honest with you.
All right, so speaking of the Master Sommelier exam, congratulations. you are a Master Sommelier. Pretty impressive.
Thank you.
Accomplishment. Thank you. Extremely impressive accomplishment, I should say. You know, we've had a few Master Sommeliers on the show. We've had a few of the people from the movie Somme on the show,
yeah.
Some of them who have worked in Colorado. Did you find that your experience – have you seen Somme? I imagine you have.
Yeah, they're all my friends. It's really funny to watch them in a movie.
did you find that your experience was similar to what they went through?
My experience is a little bit different. You know, when Aspen is obviously a phenomenal place to be a sommelier in the sense that you have an amazing clientele that can support a great, great wine program. But probably the biggest difference is we don't have as big of a community as you all have in New York or. You know, you have in San Francisco. So a lot of it is me sitting at Jay Fletcher's table practicing blind tasting. You know, it's not, you know, the late night. When I was in Washington, D.C., we would have these blind tastings and have, you know, 20 guys blind tasting until 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, I didn't have that in Aspen. So a lot of it it was sort of, you know, me pushing myself. You know, I work with Salvatore Sicario, who's the chief restaurant officer at USHE, was at the Nalden. And, you know, just sort of training with him. Training with Jay Fletcher, Shaba Overjess, our maitre d', who's going for his master's as well. I mean, we had 3 guys in town. So a very different type of community, not as intense, but definitely very, very focused, a phenomenal, really humble group, but, a lot of successes in the group.
Yeah. And so you're one of only 2 African-American master sommeliers. Is that's correct, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Do you find that the group of African American sommeliers is growing? What is the wine community like?
Well, I mean, you got to understand, wine is a luxurious item. So as quickly as minorities, tend to make more money and move up in class. Essentially, you'll see these luxury items being exposed to these minorities. I mean, again, you see now more females being master sommeliers. I mean, how many Hispanics do you have now that are master sommeliers?
Right.
I mean, so you'll see these more minorities become master sommeliers as they're exposed to these luxury items. I mean, to this point, I'm still the only person in my family that drinks wine, but I was the one that was exposed to it at a later age. It definitely sort of something clicked in me and said, this is exciting. This is something I want to focus on. But again, it's slowly but surely. It's just the way things progress.
All right. And so you're also a bald American. if you could choose any any hairstyle, what would it be?
I think the bald master sommelier thing is starting to catch on. I mean, we're up to, I think, 5 of us now, which is almost as rare as being an African American. I don't know, myself, Dustin, Sabato, there's 2 others. I forget the gentleman's name, but the guy from Vegas that just passed, and there's 1 more.
If I ever Eric sit that exam, I am shaving my head. I'm going to shave my head if I sit that exam. They're going to be like, that guy must know.
It's a good charm.
All right. So no hairstyle that you want to choose.
Just shave it. Just less to focus on. I mean, who has time to think about your hair, man? You got to be studying the subregions of Vino Verde. You got no time to cut your about your hair.
There's an insane amount of concentration of MSs in Colorado, especially through you have quite the lineage at the Little Nell. What do you think it is about
yeah.
Colorado that attracts, especially specifically Aspen, that attracts you guys there? Especially you grew up on the East Coast.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a few things. One, again, there's an absolute concentration of wealth in Colorado. You look at Boulder and Aspen, and per capita, I mean, it's, the income's extremely high, so people can afford to buy the greatest wines in the world. So on a daily basis, we're tasting these wines. I mean, these wines that people study in exams just study for the exam, like we taste these on a daily basis. It's not a bragging thing. It's just, what the market can bear. We have an amazing point of reference when it comes to these wines. We're familiar with them in multiple vintages. We've had them young and old. Another thing is, and this is one thing that Jay Fletcher definitely sort of made me very aware of was the importance of physical health when studying. You know, a lot of times, you know, when I was in the city, I was studying. The last thing I did was like work out. Maybe I eat and drink a little bit more just to deal with the stress. But you know, in Colorado, we get stressed out, so we go, you know, bike up to the Maroon Bells, or we run a half marathon, or everyone's like, you know, everyone who's ever passed a MSLA exam in Colorado has been in extreme shape. I think right after I passed, I ran a half marathon like 2 weeks later. One of the best times I had. So, you know, I think those are two of the most important things that you'll see in Colorado is, you know, again, our exposure to the great wines of the world and the fact that, you know, our physical shape is up to par. I think that's one thing that's really underestimated in the Master Sommelier exam. Hmm.
I like that. I also find that I think so much better if I went for a run that day. It's something about running and just makes the mind, I think, work better.
Yeah, and it totally just what it does is it takes the jitters off. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember so my first round I passed Tasting Theory, and I think I got the high score in both of those. But I bombed service like really hardcore because it was my first section of the exam, and I was just so rattled. And the second time I took it, obviously I had an entire year to study for service. But before I went into service, I went for a nice long run in the morning, showered right into service. So you know, I had no energy to be nervous. And that's something that's I think. People don't really pay as much attention to.
And now you've taken over the program at the Little Nell. Obviously, there's a great lineage of people who've run that. How have you put your own spin on it? Where are you taking the wine program there?
You know, for me, we've always had an amazing wine program. You know, how do you put your stamp on the wine list? I think that our wine list has always been definitely rooted in sort of the same classic producers. But my goal now is to be very current and, I travel a lot to not necessarily find new producers, but to research new producers. So, you know, for instance, I'll be visiting, Ganevat while I'm here over in France as well, to create relationships with these winemakers. But when it comes down to it, a great wine list is a great wine list. You know, you can tweak a couple of producers here and there, do a fun little page, but when you're working with one of these old grand wine lists, you know, the goal is that it's pretty seamless. What you don't want to do is, you know, walk into the Little Nell 5 years later and you can tell that, you know, they've gone through three wine directors in 10 years. You know, it should be a consistent great wine list. Now, the approach that you should go to have, you know, sort of have your own fingerprint on it should be the approach on the floor. And for me, I have a much more jovial approach. I mean, I'm 29 years old, really fortunate to pass the Master Sommelier exam when I was 28. So I haven't really had the, I don't want to say the opportunity, but, you know, I haven't been a master sommelier long enough to have an ego or to have any sort of pretense. So, you know, my approach with the table and with my service staff, again, is more youthful, jovial, very playful. I mean, one of the first things we did when we started the new restaurant was no one was allowed to wear a tie. And we wanted to make service much more approachable because we thought that, you know, first of all, we're showing up. You have, you know, maybe three or four managers on the floor. Everyone's wearing a pen. Everyone's wearing a tie. It's like, come on, what about that? Makes you comfortable, approachable. So the first thing was that we took the ties away, and everyone had to buy lighter suits. But again, you know, you just want to be more approachable and have it be fun. I think, you know, the title of Master Sommelier, you know, in and of itself is sort of an aggressive thing, right? It's like Master Sommelier, right? It's very like, it's like a monarchy or something. It's like, you know, it's not a very approachable title. So, you know, what can we do on our side at the Nell to sort of dispel these rumors that it's sort of an uptight place, this five-star, five-diamond hotel with a grand award? So that's probably my biggest focus is how to make things a little more approachable and more fun.
Well, it's a great place. I obviously I haven't been since you've taken over there, but I'm super excited to check it out. Can you do me a favor?
Come out for food and wine. You have an amazing time.
if they're inviting me, I will be there for food and wine. when you go over to Ganeva, if you could just pick up a couple of six packs of the Jean Vu for me, we could use some.
Oh,
I think we're allowed to buy about six bottles of that a year.
I'll try to ship some over.
Yeah, please send some over. We'll take it. Who else are you visiting? What else are you doing on this trip?
So I'm actually waiting for Raja Parr at the train station right now. His flight was delayed for about 2 hours. When he arrives, we're headed up to Aimon today. So we've got a very long appointment with Aimon. And then tomorrow, We're doing Jemme, Ogier, and Chaves. And then after that, we're doing Clouseau Roche. I forget the other two appointments. Some other two guys that Raj set up for us.
Nice. So you're visiting a lot of like great classic producers here. Who's someone, you know, you mentioned that you like to try to find new producers. Who's a new producer that, that you're very excited about?
You know who I've never visited was Clouseau Roche. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about that, actually. So then six days in Burgundy with another friend. We're doing, again, all the classics, Mounier, Vogue, Domaine Lefleuve, Rumier, and Lafon. And one producer I'm actually really excited about was a producer that previously I wasn't excited about, which is Olivier Lefleuve. Everyone knows Domaine Lefleuve, and everyone knows Olivier Lefleuve is sort of like the stepchild of the Lefleuve family. But, I got a tip from a very reputable sommelier that the winemaking style has changed, and the wines are clean and crisp and intense and everything you love white Burgundy to be. So I'm actually visiting them, see how the wines have progressed, which is a very different perspective. Instead of, going for the sure thing, it's like, well, let's give them another shot. So I'm really excited to try those wines again, see how they've progressed and changed their winemaking style.
Great. And is this purely an educational and fun kind of trip, or what spurred on this trip? Just kind of part of the normal, I should go multiple times a year and or at least once a year and try to keep up these relationships and see the wineries firsthand.
Yeah, and I also want to get some good road biking in. So,
oh, nice.
get some good running in. So, those are definitely my focuses. Actually, hopefully this time, actually, I'm planning on visiting the Monastery of Pere Chartreuse, which would be my first visit. It's really exciting. So,
and so, are you guys kind of in between seasons at the Nell right now? Is it? I imagine that the winter is big, but the summer is big too, right?
Yeah, so this is what they call the mud season. So we've got about 3 weeks where we close the hotel and everyone is forced to take vacation. I know it sounds miserable. And I usually, I'm the first one out of Dodge. So, again, Rhone Valley, we've got Burgundy, just a couple days on the coast in Spain that has nothing to do with wine. And then we're headed back for the James Beard Awards in New York. So.
All right. That's that doesn't sound like it sucks.
No, life, you got to live sometime, right?
You got to hit us up while you're in New York, by the way. We'd love to have you in and drink some wine together.
I will. We'll be drinking with Dustin and Will and the guys at Love and Madison for the Derby party and then trying to sober up on the 4th for the James Beard on the 5th.
Wow. And you guys have some nominations in the James Beard Awards?
Yeah, so we got nominated for the first time ever. We got nominated for Most Outstanding Wine Program.
Wow, congratulations. Really, that's huge.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a pretty amazing year for the NAL. So.
It's a pretty amazing year for you as well. Or in the last 2 years, the MS, the James Beard Award, the 30 Under 30. Better keep this
left.
Humility.
I think I'm going to have to go join a monastery and just sort of go off the grid for a while.
What's left? Are there any other professional goals that you have left?
I don't know. To me, it's like, I'm definitely not like a gimmick guy. My goal is to continuously make a great wine program at the NAL and work on efficiency and things like that. I know that sounds really, really boring and it's not like the cool thing to say, but it's something I've always been. That's always been at the forefront of my career is, we can have the flash, we can have the PR, but, how stable is your wine program? How profitable is it? And interesting at the same time. And that's something that's probably a lot harder to achieve than a really cool tweet history. So, that's my focus. My focus is how to make a great wine program and keep it consistent. I think, as a young master sommelier, I don't want to say you have a lot to prove, but you have a lot to prove. The question is, is it all theoretical and something that you regurgitated out of a book? Can you apply it to everyday life in your own wine program? And that's what we're trying to do and build our team up. We've got a lot of young sommeliers on the floor that are really excited. Nick Barb, who's a great young sommelier, joined us from 11 Madison Park pretty recently. And, we're building a team, and that's, to me, sort of priority professionally. So, yeah.
Yeah, and just to tie things back into to your earlier days, first getting into food with CCAP. How does that kind of, are you still in touch with those guys? Do you ever see yourself going into some sort of education and helping out with the CCAP program? And you have to be one of the, I imagine, most successful people to come out of the program and in the front of house. So how do you see yourself staying involved?
Of course. I mean, you know, there's always the cliche, yes, it's important to give back, and I do believe that, but I think it has to be in the right way. For me, I definitely want to continue to build my career, and then when I'm at that point, and I think that time will present itself, you know, when I can sort of reciprocate, then I will. You know, but at this point, I really want to, my goal is to help the kids by being an example and sort of pushing myself as far as I can. To show them what the possibilities are. I think that's one extremely important way of giving back is to push myself to become that example of I can do that. Or even if it's in the kitchen, yes, I can succeed. I mean, we have a couple other guys. Amar Santana is doing a phenomenal job in LA. I mean, there's numerous guys who are doing extremely well. Mine just happened to be in one, which is the most rare for that program, but. You know, I think we're at the point in the program at CCAP where you're starting to see Richard's work sort of come to fruition, and he's got some really successful students, and, I think all of us are just working really hard to be that example. And then who knows, maybe our retirement plan is we all become co-owner instructors at CCAP. I don't know if I'll be able to make crafts by then, but I'll have to practice.
Hey, I think you're, a great example for what, what hard work and can do it. Obviously, nothing happens in a vacuum. So having that kind of support program and the initial start of CCAP, it's clear that that kind of set you in the right direction. And then you worked your butt off and made good on that promise. So I think a really good example to set for these kids. And well done, sir. Well done.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Joe. Appreciate it.
How are you doing? Do I hear is the train coming soon, or do we have a few more minutes with you?
Yeah, I think, hold on, let me see. I wonder if I could see Raj walking up the stairs. Is there just the train that arrived? And he's probably not super happy about being late. I think his flight got delayed about 2.5 hours.
Oof.
But Thierry's probably in the winery waiting for us. So, we'll see. We have a couple minutes. We'll keep going until I see Raj and then I'll run.
All right. If you could get Rajan just to, when you see him, just to say a quick hello, I think that would be a lot of fun because he's been here in the studio, and I can serve it. If not, if it's like, dude, we got to get going, then totally get that.
He's a really funny guy.
Totally get that as well. Okay, so you've worked with some extraordinary chefs with Samuelson, with Keller, Colicchio. Like, how their cuisines influenced your take on wine?
Well, I think it's not so much necessarily their cuisines, but their different disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Jonathan Vino is, I mean, as regimented of a human being you could ever imagine. I mean, just so structured. I mean, really, really strict, but taught me an insane amount about work ethic and discipline. I mean, there was no such thing as a sick day. It didn't exist in Bino's philosophy. You know, I think obviously Colicchio was the first chef that I worked with that was like sort of a celebrity chef in the sense that you know he'd walk around in jeans and his chef coat. And he'd be working in three different restaurants in one service. I thought it was amazing to watch him just sort of walking around the neighborhood, walking from one restaurant to the other. That was the coolest thing. And sort of still have a little touch, still be in touch with all of his restaurants. I thought it was pretty phenomenal. And Eric Siebold, who is probably my greatest mentor as far as, the business side of things. I mean, he just has an amazing business sense. And I've never seen a chef that was so good with numbers. He's a born gambler, so he loves the numbers. When he's not in his kitchen, he's in, like, Atlantic City testing his hand at blackjack. So, really phenomenal guy to watch run a business, and again, point out the importance of profitability in a restaurant, and not just things that are sort of tip and fun, but at the end of the day, what's your bottom line like? Which is something that I don't think I'd really focus much on in my career. So, while their food is very, very different, I think one of the biggest things I learned from them was, again, work ethic, flexibility, and obviously, you know, accountability in your accounting in your restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it is a business, and without profitability, we can't you know, show people the wines that we love if we're not actually making money.
Exactly, hence the reason why so many restaurants fail. You know, so
yeah, and what that's unfortunately a sad truth of the industry.
Yeah.
So what have you, what are some of the things that you've done just in a wine operations, you know, note in order to kind of, increase profitability? Have you seen things that, I imagine in such a big program like that, there's probably little tiny adjustments that you can make that can make larger effects?
Of course. I mean, we started streamlining some of our buying, in the hotel, you know, still keeping things pretty interesting in between outlets, but when we can streamline things, changed our buying practices, you know, who we buy from, the way we buy. You understand, it's like, you know, when you're a wine director for a hotel that buys so much wine, it's almost like working on the stock market at the time. It's like, you know, these quick little decisions you make can affect the bottom line drastically. Mm-hmm. So they really put a lot, I think, in your hands, a lot of trust in the wine director. In general, I don't know why they trust me, but what they do is, I'm really happy they do, but, you know, for me, it's just buying practices, it's inventory, things like that. So,
can I ask, do you have a monthly budget, and how much do you have in inventory? You guys, you don't, if you can't give that information, you don't have to.
Oh, no, I couldn't tell you that. I'm sorry.
Okay. But I imagine you guys have such an extensive, extensive program.
Yeah. Hey, you want to say hi to Raj?
Yeah, Raj. Put Raj on.
1 second.
Hey.
Raj, welcome back to In the Drink. It's Joe.
Good to talk to you, my friend. How you doing?
I'm good, man. It sounds like you guys have a quite the trip lined up.
Oh, yeah. We are about to rush and go see Titi Alamon right now and, you know, on and on from there.
All right. I heard you got a little delayed. You feeling all right?
I feel great.
All right.
I'm ready to go drink some Cornas.
All right, man. Well, thanks for saying hello. I don't want to get in the way of any of your wine drinking, so I'll tie things up with Carlton, and have a great trip, man.
Great.
Take care.
Thanks, Joe. Take care.
See ya.
All right, so that means we're going to head out.
All right, Carlton. Thanks so much. It's been such a pleasure having you on In the Drink, and come stop by when you're in New York. All right. Take care, man. Have a great trip.
Talk to you later.
And that's been In the Drink, that with Carlton McCoy. If you guys haven't been, Aspen is pretty extraordinary, especially I'm not much of a skier, so in the summer it's absolutely beautiful, and Lil Nell is definitely quite a great spot to drink some wine. But thanks so much for listening. This has been In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.